Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. Hillary Clinton, take a breather. You get the day off. We're not going to talk about you today, but don't fear. You'll be back in one of these martinis soon enough. We look to the war on terror for all three martinis today, starting with the good martini, Jim. It took a few weeks. There's been a lot of fighting between Al-Qaeda and Iran-backed Houthi militants in Yemen. The country is destabilizing minute by minute. We're not really sure who to cheer for there, which kind of foreshadows a future martini. But the good news, Jim, is that yesterday the USS Theodore Roosevelt steamed into the region and apparently has already interdicted one Iranian ship trying to send military supplies ashore to the Houthi rebels. So it appears at least on one level, we're not just doing the bidding of the Iranians.
Yeah, this was a really pleasant surprise, Greg. And that I'm genuinely shocked. I might be overdoing it. But look, Iran wants to send more arms to the Houthi rebels out there in Yemen. They effectively want to take over Yemen, turn into a proxy state, and really kind of box in the Saudi Arabians. And we have been willing to give away the store so much in the Iranian nuclear negotiations that it's kind of interesting that we would be willing to confront them anywhere and do something they don't like. And in this case, you know, look, this is conceivably a scenario that could lead to some sort of military conflict, or at least a standoff, in which they want to send their ships through and we don't want to let them get through. This is effectively the Yemeni missile crisis, or the Gulf of Aden incident we could very easily lead to, in the sense that, look, once you have armed Iranian ships and armed U.S. military ships in close proximity, the possibility that some captain on one of those ships ends up doing something that the other side interprets as being too confrontational, whether it's a warning shot across the bow or something like that, you know, the possibility of a military exchange is not out of the realm of possibility. And we have a, you know, look, the idea of Iran managing to topple Yemen and further assert its status as the superpower of the region is exceptionally bad news for us. And so if this is genuinely the Obama administration waking up, smelling the coffee and realizing it has to do something to stand up to the Iranians and something to reassure our allies, great. I do have this nagging doubt, though, that we have backed down from the Iranians on so many different situations. The Iranians are probably feeling their oats. They got to be, you know, feeling like, all right, Obama's not really going to cross us on this. He's given away everything on every other front. So let's go try to deliver these weapons and let's see what happens. We don't know how this is going to shake out, but for once, the U.S. is not actually rolling over and waiting for the Iranian mullahs to rub their tummy in terms of who gets to control the Middle East region.
Yeah, that's nice. So let's hope that stays the course and that we're not in a few weeks seeing John Kerry say, okay, we'll ferry the weapons ashore in exchange for no inspections.
Once we've determined that they're safe, that they're up to code, that we're not handing out the Houthis unsafe weapons, or they're not properly inspected.
Exactly.
And they'll get a signing bonus.
For all the happy news that we just talked about in the good martini, let's get to the nuclear negotiations now, which is once again our bad martini. And Jim, as you pointed out in the morning jolt today, the Obama administration says 2 to 3 months, that's how close Iran is to developing a nuclear weapon. That's because of the time they've had to work with their enriched uranium. They've got enough centrifuges spinning that they could pull this off in 2 to 3 months. The Secretary of Energy says, oh, yeah, we've been very consistent, 2 to 3 months, which is exactly the amount of time between this framework and any potential deal in June, by the way. But, Jim, once again, this administration claims the narrative has never changed, when, of course, it has, because in 2013, as you point out in the jolt, the administration said it was at least a year until the Iranians would be in position to develop a nuclear weapon. So, once again, the goalposts get moved, and we're the ones on the short end of the stick, and especially the Israelis.
A couple of weeks ago, when I think it was an AP report or AFP or one of those wire services, noted that the assessment of U.S. intelligence is that the Iranians are 2 to 3 months away from building a nuclear weapon. I saw that. I was like, holy smokes, that's a really big deal. That's a really bad indicator. That indicates that our policy of containment and our efforts to stop them from getting a nuclear weapon have failed, because for the longest time, the word was, well, they're about a year away, give or take a few months here or there. By the way, the general consensus was that when Obama stepped in, they were more than a year away from attaining a nuclear weapon. This is in January 2009. So I put, right out, it's up in the morning jolt, and write out a tweet that says, Iran now 2 to 3 months away from a nuclear weapon. And some snot-nosed punk on Twitter, I don't remember which one, but somebody says, oh, more Netanyahu propaganda. So I get some glee of saying, no, actually, this is the assessment of U.S. intelligence, you boneheaded moron. Click through the link. That's why I put it there, you moron. Anyway, so you can tell, imagine this by my high opinion of this person. Now we find out that, in fact, this assessment that this guy is – that this snot-nosed punk on Twitter has been poo-pooing and rolling his eyes and dismissing as Israeli propaganda was right all along. And we have a circumstance in which Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israelis were saying something accurate. They were saying a fact. They were saying a truth that Iran was just a matter of months away from being able to put together a nuclear weapon. And the United States government was saying false. We were calling them liars, and we knew better. We put out disinformation to discredit the Israeli government. Greg, we are now through the looking glass. We are now doing – well, what's the whole point of doing that? Why would we do this? What's the advantage to us of this? And you might argue that, our assessment of – maybe we didn't want the Iranians to know how accurately we were in knowing the status of their nuclear weapons program. I suppose you could do that, but once the Israelis are coming out and saying they're 2 or 3 months away, any strategic advantage of that, and the idea of us calling the Israelis liars, we don't get anything out of that. The only serious advantage to that is that it helps the Iranians. It makes them look less threatening. It makes them look like a less pressing threat. So what's kind of astounding is the United States government and the White House have now turned into the Iranian mullah's PR firm. We now tell the world what the Iranians want them to believe. That they're not as dangerous as that they seem, that they're not as close to a bomb as they seem, and they're not as threatening as they seem. Once again, with this negotiation process, Greg, you started to hear, okay, we know what the Iranians want. They want a nuke. We know what Barack Obama and John Kerry want. They want a legacy. They want a nice historic photo op in Tehran, the handshaking, the bill signing ceremony, Obama holding up the piece of paper declaring peace in our time. Who's representing us? Who's representing our interests and the people who really don't want Iran to ever get a nuclear weapon because they can't be trusted with one? At this point, nobody, other than maybe the Israelis. That's what we've been driven to. Each step of this Iranian negotiation process gets worse, including the fact now knowing we can't trust what the administration says about these sorts of things because they've proven they will lie about something as life and death as the Iranian nuclear program.
I think legacy is the answer to your question about why the U.S. would provide disinformation to this. I think they probably thought that if everyone knew it was 2 to 3 months, that would raise perhaps the military option to a more viable option, and that would ruin any diplomatic attempt to wave that piece of paper you were mentioning, and therefore their photo op legacy is spoiled. That's the only thing I can think of.
We did spend, like a good half a decade utterly demonizing an administration, the Bush administration, for allegedly overhyping a threat. What happens when we have an administration that underhypes a threat and that spends a lot of time lying to us, that knows another country is much more dangerous than it is and spends years telling the American public, don't worry, it's not as bad as it looks? Yeah, that's a bad martini. That's a bad, Everyone's like, skip the crazy martini. There's nothing worse than that. So.
Oh, wow. Well, you haven't heard it yet. So we go from Yemen to Iran to Afghanistan now. And Jim, the crazy martini is simultaneous jihad. ISIS claimed responsibility for a blast, an attack in Afghanistan that the Taliban thought was excessive and wrong. So there have been mutual jihads declared one against the other. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the leader of ISIS, who the UK Guardian, meanwhile, says has been seriously wounded in an attack. So that would be good news. Potential good martini for later in the week, hopefully. He has called Mullah Omar a fool and illiterate warlord. And he says that Omar does not have the spiritual or political credibility. Meanwhile, ISIS has been forbidden by the Taliban to ever have their flag raised on Afghan soil. Jim, the bad part, of course, is that it's a very fragile situation in Afghanistan as we continue to pull out. And obviously, innocents could suffer here. But when we've got evil organizations declaring jihad against each other, at least they're focused on each other and not killing us for the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, as long as they, not too many innocent people go down to the crossfire, this might be one of our better developments in a while. We really ought to be fair, Greg, to ISIS. Mullah Omar is a fool, and their assessment is pretty accurate. But I want to go back to the very first thing you said there, that ISIS commits a bombing in Afghanistan. And did I hear you correctly that Al-Qaeda declared the bombing and the death toll and the explosion excessive?
Yes.
Just what the heck do you have to do for Al-Qaeda to declare a bombing excessive? Oh, I'm sorry. We took down the World Trade Center and left a giant crater in lower Manhattan. But that was too much, okay? Too much C4, guys. Knock it off. I'm reminded of the Dennis Miller routine about a member of Guns N' Roses who got thrown out. He said, I'll clean up the language a little bit, but just what the heck do you have to do to get thrown out of Guns N' Roses? Join a Bible study, you know? Forgot to return a library book? So, if we can get Al-Qaeda and ISIS fighting each other, I will take back a some significant portion of my criticism of the Obama foreign policy team, because that would be delicious. I'd fully support, you know, never mind, you know, the Iranian arms shipments. Let's seize those arms shipments and give them to ISIS and Al-Qaeda so they can kill each other better. I am perfectly fine with this. It's like watching a football game between two teams you hate. You end up rooting for injuries. And just let them beat the hell out of each other. But, you know, look, there are some people who cynically observe the Iran-Iraq war was like this for the United States and its interests. Ayatollah Khomeini versus Saddam Hussein, who do you root for in this one? And you're right, the more time they spend fighting each other, the less time they'll spend fighting us. So maybe some good can come out of it. But the fact that we could be rooting for one against the other pretty much is a wraps it up as a very good crazy martini of the day.
We needed some good news in the crazy martini. So, Jim, very good. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.